This is Jim Sklavounis of Grinder Man, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Morning Show. Today on the WGXC Morning Show, we're going to hear the WGXC Congressional Report with all the news of the New York 1918s, the 20 and 21 congressional districts and what those recent winning candidates are going to be doing now that they have won their election. Plus, we'll hear brand new music from Samara Lubelski and Marsha Bassett from Hall of Fame and Double Leopards, respectively, and also from Meg Baird, who used to play with the Espers. All that and plus the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather, the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after Jason Martin from Troy has finished singing this song. Then it's time for the WGXC Local News on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
On Thursday, December 1st, there are all kinds of great bands at Tubby's in Kingston, including Anla from Reynolds from Argentina, Rump State, which includes Mark Morgan from the band Sightings, Decimus with members of the No Neck Blues Band, and Rambutan, Eric Hardiman and Michael Kafer from Albany, and Doubles from Kingston. That's all at Tubby's in Kingston. On Thursday, December 1st, go to the WGXC community calendar online for more information about this event and many others in your community.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tunstall Studio Publishing of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Heather Bellow reports for the Berkshire Eagle about how the various elements of GE's proposed upland disposal facility for PCB contaminated sludge will affect the health of residents in Lee, Massachusetts, is now under consideration by the Lee Board of Health. GE is looking to dispose of the sediment in the Berkshires to avoid the $200 million cost to ship it out of state to a facility licensed to accept toxins such as PCBs. The board held an adjudicatory hearing on November 19th in the Lee Middle School and High School auditorium. The board's involvement was prompted by the Housatonic River Initiative's appeal of the current cleanup in federal court. If the board decides the dump will be a health threat, other questions arise. The board says state law gives them the ability to stop the dump project if it is found to violate local laws, while the Federal Environmental Protection Agency says it cannot. The Board of Health has collected technical and other expert documentation to help it decide and will allow 30 days for the submission of more testimony and other pertinent information that relates specifically to the threat of human health posed by the dump. Neither GE representatives nor EPA officials were present at the hearing. Though the EPA has referred the board to its record, GE is another story. The board stated that GE's lack of participation will be taken to infer it, quote, has no evidence, unquote, that the dump will not be a hazard to the community. At the hearing, residents of Lee and other communities brought up a host of unknown risks, including the lack of proper data that could forecast problems, the potential impact on the drinking water reservoir, and possible airborne contamination after the sludge is deposited in the dump before it is capped. The management and transport of the contaminated mud have not been addressed by GE, but are of great concern to residents and experts alike. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that after a weekend when police thwarted an attack on New York City Jewish communities and five people were shot and killed at an LGBTQ nightclub in Colorado, Governor Kathy Hochul said New York State police are expanding surveillance and protection for at-risk communities. Kathy Hochul's office said, and I quote, I have directed the New York State Police to ramp up monitoring and increase support for communities that are potential targets of crime. Here in New York, we do not tolerate violence or bigotry toward any community. We stand united against hate today and every day, end quote. Two men were arrested in New York City this weekend after making threats toward the New York Jewish community and a house of worship, and a Colorado man was taken into custody after killing five. State police officials said they wanted to stop the next hate crime before it happens. Acting Superintendent Stephen Negrelli said, and I quote, the state police will work in close coordination with our state, local, and federal partners to keep all our communities safe from violence. We appreciate the resources and support from Governor Hochul to help us accomplish this mission, end quote. Read the full story at New York State of Politics.
Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that effective November 21st, both of Greene County's ski resorts were open for business with the opening of Wyndham Mountain. Nearby Hunter Mountain opened on November 19th. Quote, our mountain operations team has been hard at work to blanket the West Peak and will have top-to-bottom skiing and riding for you on Whistler and Wolverine as well as the Wall and Whistler Chute, unquote, Wyndham Mountain reported. Meanwhile, in Columbia County, the Catamount Ski Resort in Hillsdale remains closed. In a statement posted to its website on November 21st, the resort says snowmakers are continuing to make snow on both sides of the resort. Quote, it looks like a warming trend is headed our way, so snowmaking is likely shutting down later today for the moment. We'll continue to make snow as temperatures allow, and we'll update the site with opening day information as it becomes available, unquote. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com.
Raymond Pignon reports for Columbia Green Media that former superintendent of the Catskill Central School District, Dr. Ronell Cook, died in a car accident last weekend. The Catskill School District released a statement about Cook, who was the superintendent from 2017 to 2022. And I quote, the Catskill Central School District mourns the passing of Dr. Ronell Cook, our former superintendent of schools who died suddenly over the weekend. Dr. Cook served our school district with distinction from July 2017 to July 2022, and his presence here touched every aspect of our school community. We offer our deepest sympathies to his family, friends, and co-workers during this time of great sadness. Support is available at all of our school buildings for any student or staff member who is experiencing grief by contacting your building's principal, end quote. Cook left the district September 3, 2022. Bronx News 12 reports that Cook, who was living in Newburgh, was killed in a traffic accident November 20th in Yonkers. Cook's 18-year-old son, Jaden, of Yonkers, remains hospitalized with injuries that are not considered life-threatening.
Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that the city of Hudson is looking for a dog control officer. The Common Council is currently accepting applications for the position, which pays $7,200 per year. The term of office will run through the 2023 calendar year, beginning January 1st. The dog control officer is charged with making random twice-weekly visits to the Hudson Dog Park to confirm the canine patrons are properly licensed and is also on call 24 hours a day to round up stray, abandoned, or unaccompanied dogs found on the street or other public property. The city's dog control officer is also tasked with assisting the Hudson police when necessary and issuing tickets to dog owners who have failed to get a license for their dogs. Under state law, dog control officers can issue tickets and serve summonses. The deadline to apply for the dog control officer position is December 12th. Interested candidates are asked to include a cover letter explaining why they want to be the dog control officer, a written proposal for dog control services for 2023, and a resume detailing relevant work and education history. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Andrea Mako reports at Porcupine Soup that the price of home heating oil is so high this winter that two local Catholic churches may close for the cold months. The finance committees for both the St. John the Baptist in Greenville and Sacred Heart, Our Lady of Knock in Cairo both recommended that the buildings be closed during January, February, and March of 2023, according to Father Jay Atherton on November 20th. Atherton said the closure is, and I quote, due to the exceptionally high cost of oil this winter, end quote. Instead, the churches would invite parishioners from the temporarily shuttered churches to the Sacred Heart Our Lady of Knock location in East Durham, which is between the two other locations. The New York State Energy Research and Development Authority reports that the average cost of fuel oil in the Upper Hudson Valley region has almost doubled in a year to $6.09 a gallon. Atherton said, and I quote, having reviewed their proposals and also aware of some exceptional financial and pastoral challenges all parishes will be facing in the near future, I am inclined to accept their recommendations, end quote. Read the full story at Porcupine Soup.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Well, on Tuesday, it will be sunny with a high near 44 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 26 degrees. And on Wednesday, sunny with a high near 48 degrees. And Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 29 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears. In Greene and Columbia counties.
On Tuesday, November 22nd, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, including at 9 a.m. tune in the WGXC Morning Show with the WGXC Congressional Report with news from the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st Congressional Districts locally. 11 a.m. It's time for the Early Electro Mix Show with compositions this week from Andre Storter, Daria Semengen, and Pauline Oliveros. Then at noon, after the local news, it's time for the 8th Annual Thanksgiving Tri-Fanifest of Intolerable Music on the Overlook Show from Rob Saffer, live from Ulster County. Tune in for all sorts of fun. At 3 p.m., the Radio Art Hour features works from Jeanette El Haoui, 31 Down, and Aki Ando. At 7 p.m., Amanda Lees and Jenny Yeti talk movies live from the Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda show. And Michael Wilde is in Hudson with the Mostly Single show playing 78s. And at 10 p.m., Dan Seward is live from Columbia County with the Battlefield Earth show on 90.7 FM, WGXC.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Wednesday, November 30th, Lex Gray and the Urban Pioneers from Catskill celebrate the release of their new single, I Believe in You, from the album How Many Roads, performing at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock. That's Wednesday, November 30th at 8 p.m. at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock. Lex Gray and her Urban Pioneers band that usually features Sonny Rock, Ed Wiliski, Brian DeWan, and Tim Farrell. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org for more information about this show and many others.
Early Electromix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, November 22nd. Local early morning temperatures range from 19 degrees over in Dover Plains to 40 degrees in Voorheesville. Those aren't always the coldest numbers you'll see in the day, but they're close and give an idea of what the temperature difference is, even in just our listening area. Regional average soil temperature is 41 degrees. Today's closest likely snowfall is about 100 miles away in the Adirondacks. It looks like the winds have calmed down and Lake Ontario has cooled off. Add in some approaching high pressure systems and it's looking pretty clear and dry through the coming holiday. Today we hit 44 degrees at 3 p.m., conditions will be freezing in the morning, cold rest of the day. Layers, people. And those that didn't listen to me about caulking the windows, well, you're feeling it now, huh? Overnight, temps dip to 28 degrees. Tomorrow, mercury leaps to 49 degrees at 2 p.m. Sunny with a moderate wind, bring that winter coat and don't forget the hat. 28 degrees again overnight takes us into a mostly sunny Thanksgiving with a high of 46 degrees and similar cold conditions. Winds aim to be calm, so after dinner walks should not be impacted. Sunset today will be at 4:17 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:51 a.m. Looking way up, we have a minor chance of G1 class magnetic storms as a coronal mass ejection could give us a tap as it passes by. Solar wind speed is currently 379 kilometers per second at 4.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 83. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Daniel Rue of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to the video rental store in your mind.
Looking for something to watch, but feeling overwhelmed by all the options?
Feeling unsatisfied with all the boring, restrictive categories like romance and drama or horror?
Tune in to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda every second and fourth Tuesday at 7 p.m. and get turned on to movie genres like eco-horror,
unsettling kids' movies,
alien boyfriends,
creepy therapy.
Start listening so you can start watching today.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy that took a little nap, woke up and didn't know where he was.
here listening to Samara Lubelski's Split Circuits on the radio.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
If the CEO of the railroad or other top executives at that railroad, I wonder if they would get fired if they got sick or if they had a medical emergency in their families. I doubt very much that they would get fired.
Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont says he supports railroad workers' efforts to fight for increased medical leave as they continue to negotiate new contracts. One of the largest railroad unions narrowly voted to reject a contract deal brokered by the White House in September. Experts say a national rail strike ahead of the holidays could cripple the U.S. economy. Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock is encouraging Georgians to vote early in the state's December 6 runoff election, but Republicans say not on Saturday.
If you eat on Thursday and shop on Friday, certainly you can vote on Saturday or on Sunday.
The state of Georgia is appealing a judge's ruling that allows counties to offer early voting this Saturday ahead of the runoff between Warnock and his Republican challenger, Herschel Walker. Republicans say state law prohibits voting on days following a Georgia state holiday, which includes Friday.
We're winning big, big, big in the Republican Party for the nomination like nobody's ever seen before. Trump at 71, Ron DeSantis at 10%, Mike Pence at 7%.
Former President Donald Trump always enjoys a good crack at his political rivals, but a new Harvard Caps Harris poll survey finds Florida Governor Ron DeSantis closing the gap with Trump as they both vie for a shot at the White House in 2024. DeSantis has gained 11 points, earning the backing of 28% of Republicans, while Trump fell 9 points to just 46%. Meanwhile, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, Premila Jayapal, says President Joe Biden should run for a second term in 2024 and that he'll need the backing of progressives to win.
We are going to have to keep the hope alive and show the pathway for people to turn out in 2024 so we can get the rest of the president's agenda done.
A new USA Today Ipsos poll finds nearly three quarters of Democratic voters say Biden could win if he runs again. Biden says he'll make an official decision on whether to run early next year. Two Arizona counties have voted to delay certifying their ballots from the midterm elections following Republican claims that vote counting machines were not properly certified. Republican gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake, who lost to current Secretary of State Katie Hobbs, has claimed without evidence that voters were disenfranchised. Finally, the Justice Department has officially classified the suicide of a Capitol Police officer who defended the Capitol during the January 6th attack as a line-of-duty death, therefore allowing his family to receive benefits. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In September, we reported on expectations of a high turnout of younger voters in the 2022 midterms. Did that turnout materialize, and what were the consequences? A Harvard Kennedy School study released in late October suggested that 40% of 18 to 29-year-olds said they would definitely vote in the midterms. Then Tufts University's Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, CIRCLE, found that an estimated 27% of that group did vote. That number was historically high, but not as high as the 31% turnout in the 2018 midterms, driven by a reaction to Trump's presidency and the shooting of students at Florida's Stoneman Douglas High School. CIRCLE's polling found that nationally, 12% of all votes cast were younger voters, and in battleground states, turnout matched 2018's 31%. Battleground states also saw younger voters break heavily for Democratic candidates for U.S. Senate, Congress, and governor. In Pennsylvania's Dr. Oz-John Fetterman U.S. Senate race, younger voters supported Fetterman 70% to 28%. In Arizona's Senate race, they backed Mark Kelly over election denier Blake Masters 76% to 20%. Data shows that youth turnout was critical to the outcomes of races nationwide. More details on how youth voters of color voted in our next report. We have links and articles at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Are you a follower of the World Cup?
Absolutely, as much as I can. I've already caught a little bit of two games thus far, and it just started yesterday.
Yeah, so the it's a pretty evil World Cup in terms of World Cups, which are often pretty evil. Mussolini hosted one, and whatever the Argentinian dictator hosted one. But now it's in Qatar, and they, basically enslaved a bunch of foreign workers to build the stadiums, and all kinds of bad things go on in Qatar. There, gay people are rounded up, and it's a wonderful place. And so that's where
this is an important issue you raise, because we're mixing one of the most beautiful things in the world, which is like sports and competition and human endeavor through the physical body and this beautiful ancient tradition we have, with the modern terribleness of slave labor and just absolute exploitation and this sort of like puppet state of the United States, of this corrupt, and I believe there's still very, very fundamentalist religious. I haven't seen any women in the stadium thus far. I saw Qatar play Ecuador yesterday. Ecuador won 3-0, by the way. Go Ecuador. And it's really appalling that these cultures over there that are supported by the West and supported by the oil industry in particular are able to still thrive and host the World Cup.
Yeah, so
slave labor and exploitation. So thanks for raising that issue. Well, I love the World Cup. I love soccer. But I hate slavery, exploitation, and neo-imperialism.
Well, I brought this all up because there's a little news, which is there are two protests early on in the World Cup so far. The country Denmark is wearing black uniforms on purpose as a protest about the conditions in Qatar and about the human rights violations in Qatar. So that's pretty cool. And then today, England beat Iran 6-2. And the Iranians refused to sing their own national anthem before the game, protesting their own country's horrible treatment of the young people protesting there in Iran. So two major protests already at the World Cup.
Interesting. Thanks for sharing that, Tom. And I bet there will be more to come.
Yes. And the results, maybe some people are interested in. The United States tied 1-1.
Wales,
that's right. Wales
played Wales today. I was not able to see that. Okay, so 1-1.
The U.S. goal in the first half was beautiful, really awesome forward breakaway pass. They gave up a penalty shot late in the game to Wales to tie it.
So those ancient Celts, those Welsh people, they managed to tie it up. So, okay, so the battle continues.
Next, we hear from Marcia Bassett, plays with Double Leopards, and Samara Lubelski, who started off with the band Hall of Fame. Now they're both renowned solo artists that perform together often. And here is a live track called Vancouver from their West Coast Live album from 2022 on the radio at WGXC. This is the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Current Democratic Representative Paul Tonko from the 20th District votes with the positions of President Joe Biden 100% of the time, according to the 538.com website. Republican Elise Stefanik, currently representing the 21st District, votes with Biden's positions 19.3% of the time. Democrat Pat Ryan just began representing the 19th Congressional District and has yet to be included in the 538 rankings. Ryan will represent the 18th Congressional District in January, when Republican Mark Molinaro takes over representing the 19th Congressional District.
Mark Weiner at Syracuse.com reports that Republican Brandon Williams will win the 22nd congressional district election in central New York over Democrat Francis Canole. This is the last congressional election to be called in New York, and it means it is very likely that Republicans will control the House of Representatives when all the national election results are final. New York voters can partially take credit for turning over power to the Republicans, with two Hudson Valley-based congressional seats flipping from Democrat to Republicans. Democrat Josh Riley lost to Mark Molinaro in the 19th Congressional District, flipping a district previously represented by Democrat Antonio Delgado. And Sean Maloney, the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee Chair, lost to Republican Assemblyperson Mike Lawler in the 17th Congressional District. Republican Representative John Katko retired from his 22nd district seat after voting to impeach former President Donald Trump and having little chance to win a primary election. New York's congressional delegation will now be 15 Democrats and 11 Republicans, the most seats the Republicans have held since 2001-2003. Read more about this story at Syracuse.com. Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union that Representative Elise Stefanik was reelected November 15th by her Republican peers to keep serving as the party's conference chair. Stefanik retained her position as the fourth-ranking House member in the party by a 144-74 vote over Representative Brian Donalds, a Florida Freedom Caucus member. Stefanik took over the position after many Republicans were angry at Liz Cheney for voting to impeach former President Donald Trump. He announced on November 15th that he was running for president again, but Stefanik already endorsed him a week ago. Stefanik said she plans to, and I quote, keep our message disciplined, unified, and on offense every single day, end quote, as conference chair. Stefanik defeated moderate Democrat Matt Castelli by 18 points in this fall's election for her fifth term in New York's 21st congressional district, which now includes Rensselaer County with much of the North Country. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Joseph Spector of Politico tries to figure out why New York Democrats running for Congress did so poorly in this fall's election. In the Hudson Valley alone, Democrats lost two elections, with Republican Mark Molinaro flipping Antonio Delgado's former seat by beating newcomer Josh Riley, and with Representative Sean Patrick Maloney, the head of the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee, also losing. The story does not say that Democrats in Congress were expected to do poorly, as the party controlling the White House usually suffers in non-presidential elections. But Democrats nationally did better than expected, largely because of Republican positions against abortion and democracy. So why did New York congressional Democrats do worse than other Democrats? Some blamed Governor Kathy Hochul's short coattails. State Senator Elijah Reichlin Melnick, a Rockland County Democrat who lost re-election after outperforming Hochul by 8 points in his district, said, and I quote, "The governor's campaign, I think, was just abysmally run," end quote. Hochul disagreed. She told reporters November 16th in Yonkers, and I quote, "Everybody can assess their own races and what went wrong for them, but we showed up. I was everywhere, as was the state party," end quote. Many Democrats blamed Democratic Committee Chair Jay Jacobs for not organizing a better get-out-the-vote effort and have called on him to resign. Hundreds of prominent Democrats have signed a letter calling on Jacobs to quit. The letter read, and I quote, "Jay Jacobs is not fit to serve as chair of the state Democratic Party," and it's time for Governor Hochul to work with the party to elect a focused, determined, unifying party leader, end quote. Hochul also disagrees with these officials. Hochul said, and I quote, I think he did a great job as chair, and he continues as chair. I am not changing anything, end quote. Redistricting is also being blamed for the defeats of New York's Democratic congressional candidates. First, the Independent Redistricting Commission failed to draw new lines, kicking the process to the Democratic legislature. Then the Democratic-appointed Court of Appeals tossed out the map Democrats in the legislature drew, leading to new lines being drawn by a Republican-friendly court in rural Steuben County. Former Republican Congressperson John Faso said, and I quote, the lines that were created by the courtmaster created the most competitive number of House districts in the country, end quote. That redistricting snafu also created a special election in August that may have confused voters. Read more about this story at Politico.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information. Here's the track Portent Signal Remapping from the 2021 album Losing Circles. This is Marsha Bassett, who also plays in Double Leopards, and Thomas DeMuzio.